Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, this is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. The pandemic recession is unusual in several important ways, including signs that Americans are at least thinking about creating new businesses in big numbers. Now, the evidence is the increase in employer identification number applications, which new businesses file with the IRS. Even if the actual number of businesses started is much less than the applications suggest, there's much speculation over why so much interest in starting a new business. It could be that so many small businesses have closed, have shuttered, especially in the early months of the pandemic, that opportunities are opening up for newcomers. At the same time, the pandemic has changed consumer buying patterns and work habits, and that's wiped out revenue for existing businesses, but may have opened up new markets, new opportunities for upstarts. And many new businesses are by the self-employed, solopreneurs, often laid off from their job. They become freelancers, contract workers, and turn side gigs into full-time work. Question is, if you're forced to start a business or decide now is the time to take the leap, how can you hike the odds of success? So to gain more insight into the risks and reward of starting a business in a tough economy, I'm joined by Gary Cunningham, President and CEO of Prosperity Now. The Washington, D.C.-based national organization works at helping low-income people build wealth and assets. Now, you probably know Gary from his former job as head of the Minneapolis-based MEDA, the Metropolitan Economic Development Association. Welcome, Gary.
Hi, Chris. How are you? Thanks for having me today.
I'm just glad, so glad you could join us. And we're also joined by Alex West Steinman, co-founder and CEO of The Coven. The Coven is a creative, comfortable, and safe workspace for women and non-binary folks. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
And we want to hear from you. If you just started a business during the pandemic or thinking of starting a new business, tell us your story. Did you lose your job and become self-employed? What has been your experience so far? Call us at 651-227-6000 or toll-free 800-242-2828. And Alex, just to start off, tell us, what has been the story of the Coven as a business during 2020, the year of the pandemic?
Well, it's been a wild one. We opened our first location back in 2018 in Minneapolis. So we're a community and workspace, like you mentioned, where it's, you know, a space where folks can come and co-work. But we also offer events and programming around personal and professional transformation and growth. And so we offered in-person events about 2 to 3 a week, in addition to having our space open for folks to work at. We did open our second location in St. Paul in January of this year, which feels like a decade ago now, and had about, 300 people packed in our space, before anyone even knew what coronavirus was, and so it was interesting to have to close about 6 weeks later, essentially close our physical business temporarily to keep everyone safe. And we really pivoted, like most businesses have. We turned from hosting 2 to 3 events a week in person to hosting daily, if not multiple events a day, all virtual overnight. So we launched a digital membership and did a, complete 180 to turn our business completely virtually. And it was a pretty huge lift for a really small team that we have as a startup. But really, it was amazing. We doubled our membership in a few months because it was really truly people wanted to stay connected with one another. Yeah,
doubled your membership. And I have to say, I just agree with you so much. It feels like we have been living with this forever.
Yes.
But really, it's not been that long. So what are you hearing about the experiences of your members?
You know, our members are all over. So we have about half of our members are entrepreneurs and the other half have come from the corporate world. So it's kind of a unique mix of people. A lot of our members on the entrepreneurial side are freelancers. And so many of them are finding themselves in positions where, you know, they're losing business because their clients are no longer able to pay them. So it's like entrepreneurs are hurting other entrepreneurs because they're not able to, keep their consultants on. On the other hand, though, we see a slew of members who've been able to pivot, particularly folks who are business coaches or marketing coaches, because other small businesses need that type of support right now. And so we're seeing kind of this mixture of folks. What I will say is that our membership is primarily women. So we serve women, non-binary and trans folks. So if you're looking at, you know, what else is happening during this pandemic is we have women who potentially have children that they have to take care of, or older folks who they're taking care of. And so, you know, we're really finding that our parents who are entrepreneurs are seeing a decrease in their paid work because they're increasing their at-home work. And so there's this kind of unique balance of, you know, everyone is really kind of fighting their own battle right now, where we have some entrepreneurs who are really struggling, and we have other entrepreneurs who are really, you know, figuring it out and able to pivot their businesses.
So, Gary, what are, from your position, I mean, what are you hearing about? How has the pandemic affecting, you know, the people that you work with in terms of their businesses?
Well, if you look at businesses overall, since the COVID crisis hit, it's fluctuated, but nearly 25% of all small businesses have closed, at least temporarily, during this crisis. And if you look at sectors like restaurants, hotels, and retails, those numbers are far higher than that. If you look at minority businesses, where we focus a lot of our attention, particularly African-American businesses, the Federal Reserve has estimated that over 41% of those businesses have closed. And the impact of that is that, you know, small businesses create 66% of the new net private sector jobs in our economy. And they also reinvest about 68% of all revenues that they earn. So these small businesses are the lifeblood of our community. They're also the cultural main street of our communities, of our neighborhoods. And if you look at, you know, small businesses influence the financial lives of over 30% of the U.S. population. So just before we got on, I see that Governor Walz is thinking about taking some emergency measures to shore up small businesses in Minnesota. But those, that's happening around the country. And then if you look at minority businesses or what they call BIPOC businesses, they are even more hard hit by this situation. And so we need to, you know, take some decisive action. We just finished a report with Yale University and Drexel University, and I was a co-author of it, called A Five-Step Roadmap for Rebuilding the U.S. Small Business Sector and Reviving Entrepreneurship and Closing Our Racial Wealth Gap in this country. And we believe we can do that, but we're going to have to take some bold measures in order to do that in this country, both at the federal and state level.
So I was curious, why put out a report like that? Because you and I counted it 10 co-authors. Why put out a report like that now?
Well, it's so critical that we just not think about just the current crisis we're in, but actually getting us to rebuild America after the pandemic happens. So we actually call for significant investments to be made, both in grant and loan products at scale, and that the federal government has a responsibility to ensure a backstop for these small businesses. So that's immediate. But in the long term, we actually need to unleash our entrepreneurial spirit if we're going to rebuild this American economy. And that means reducing barriers for businesses, barriers to entry, regulations that get in the way of businesses actually being able to grow themselves. This is an extraordinary situation, so we're going to have to take extraordinary measures to rebuild the American economy. But Chris, I'd say in America, we've done this before. We had the Great Depression. We had World War II. America came out of that and was able to build the largest economy in the world. So we actually, as Americans, have the opportunity to actually now rethink and revisit and create an economy that works for everyone. But it won't be done through timid measures or hesitant measures. The federal government, the state governments, and the private sector have to take some major steps in order for us to recover.
All right, so let's build on. Let's go to the phone lines, and let's go to Elisa in St. Paul. Did I say your name right, Elisa?
You did, yes.
What is your comment or story?
So I was about to launch a new business in March, just a couple of weeks before the shutdown. And I've pivoted now because my business model fits right in with where everybody is at right now. So I decided to start a personal storytelling service called lifeandstory.net because I'm a longtime journalist. And the stories that have always fascinated me most weren't those of politicians or celebrities, but those of everyday people. So I decided to create this storytelling business because I want to capture what's most important to them and preserve those stories for future generations. And right now, we're all stuck at home. We're separated from those that we love. And it's the perfect time to sit down and have those conversations.
And how is business?
Well, I'm launching this week.
Okay. So, well, good luck on that. And Alex, it sounds like something that you were mentioning that you're seeing, I don't know if it's right for me to say a lot, but this is what you're seeing.
Yeah. You know, we're seeing a lot of folks who have businesses or ideas that really serve this particular market. So it's interesting that, you know, we have so many folks who do event planning. So, you know, one of our members, Gretchen Culver from Rocket Science Events, she launched weddings are no longer happening at the scale that they were happening previously, but she noticed an opportunity to create what she's calling mini weddings, or MINNE weddings, like Minnesota weddings, that are small. And, you know, they're like one or, you know, two people, maybe, you know, the officiant, and that's kind of it. And they've become this huge thing. And now all of a sudden she's, you know, booked out through 2021 and is taking, reservations into the new year. I think people are really looking for ways to continue celebrating. We have, you know, many other members who have been, you know, maybe not journalists, but photographers and videographers, and they're really looking for ways to, you know, connect with community and continue their craft, and they're really kind of struggling to figure out what is their next step. But, you know, they can tap folks like the Gretchen Culvers of the world who are starting their own businesses or starting new spins off of their businesses to find ways to, you know, get back into videography, get back into photography and you know, practice their creative craft, but in maybe new and unique ways that are, you know, physically distanced and safe.
I know this is a small thing, but I'm always in awe of people who are able to come up with these really clever names and that have multiple meanings. I always admire that among entrepreneurs. It's really kind of, it's very cool.
We've got quite a few of those, yes.
So let me give out the phone numbers again. The numbers are 651-227-6000, toll-free, 800-242-2828. So if you're thinking about starting a business, if you're launching a business, what would you like to know? If you're self-employed, you got a side hustle to pay the bills, wondering where you might get the money to open a business, give us a call. And now what I'd like to do is turn to Brian White, and he is co-founder of Two Scoops Ice Cream Eatery, and it opened in June, and it's on Selby Avenue. Welcome, Brian.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about Two Scoops.
Yeah, so Two Scoops Ice Cream Eatery is it's an ice cream shop. We do have a hot food menu as well, but our claim to fame is our delicious ice cream. So we this whole idea was actually, I would say, about 3 years in the making. So it wasn't something that kind of came up, you know, as far as, you know, putting the ideas together, like, near the pandemic. It just so happened to fall right around the time that the pandemic happened. So it was just kind of one of this weird coincidence. So, you know, we had this plan to open, and actually we were supposed to open at the beginning of May, but we ended up opening May 30th, actually, was our opening date. And so, you know, we got the orders from Governor Walz that, you know, restaurants had to close down and all this good stuff. And so that kind of pushed us back about a month. And so during that time, it was tough. You know, we had to figure out exactly what we were going to do, make some adjustments kind of on the fly. But we were able to do that. We come up with our social distancing plan and all that. And then once Governor Walz lifted some of the restrictions that said that, you know, customers could come in and pick up and go, or we could do delivery and all that, you know, we were able to make those adjustments. And it actually worked out for us. I think people became very conscious of the ideas of how this pandemic was impacting small businesses. So I think people were very conscious about making an effort to get out to support those businesses. And so we, you know, we kind of benefited from that.
Well, I'm curious, your friends or your peers, were they cheering you on when you're opening on at the end of May, or were they saying, are you crazy?
You know, it was a little bit of both, but for the most part, I think even those people that were saying, are you crazy? They still showed up for the grand opening. So, you know, the support was definitely there from the community. You know, my family, we're born and raised here in St. Paul, so we know a lot of people here. But this, even outside of that, you know, the community that our shop is in the Rondo neighborhood just has a historic tradition of you know, doing for self and supporting businesses in the neighborhood. So I think that tradition kind of, it benefited, you know, what we have going on. So, you know, even to this day, we're still getting that support. And, you know, we're just happy. We're so thankful things have worked out, even in the midst of, you know, the pandemic, and even also during that time, the tragedy of what happened with Mr. George Floyd. You know, I think around that time, people, there was kind of this dark cloud over America. And I think people were kind of looking for something to bring some happiness and some joy, some camaraderie back. And I think Two Scoops kind of provided, you know, an environment like that. You know, people were coming in and you can see that they were just wearing a lot of this anguish and things like that. And they come in and leave out with a smile, you know, and those people now have become regular. So we see them on a weekly basis now, you know, and so we're just thankful for that we could be a part of that.
Well, tell us, where is Two Scoops? Give us the address.
Absolutely. 921 Selby Avenue in St. Paul. Right on the corner of Selby and Milton. It's the location that we're in now. Actually has been a cornerstone in the community there for quite a while. It used to be called Golden Time Coffee. And so a lot of people kind of frequent that place, but they've actually moved into a different location across the street from us. And now we have that corner there. So 921 Selby Avenue in St. Paul.
Well, congratulations. And
absolutely.
And hopefully you have a wonderful winter.
Yeah. And then I just like to put this out there too. There is, you know, obviously with the pandemic and then the weather changing, people are thinking, oh, wow, ice cream in, you know, December, you know, how is that going to work? It does work. Minnesotans are, you know, I think they're accustomed to the cold weather. So a lot of people will eat ice cream year round. And we do have DoorDash and Grubhub and curbside pickup, even though the pandemic is going on in the weather. So we still have ways to get ice cream to the people. So I just want to put that out there.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. That was Brian White, and he's a co-founder of Two Scoops Ice Cream Eatery on Selby Avenue in St. Paul. So, Gary, I'm curious, what is your reaction to Brian's story?
Well, actually, I know that corner well. I'm so it was heartwarming, and it gets at that cultural context of building community that small businesses do, and the joy that his business is bringing to people. I've seen it time and time again working with these small business owners that are in retail, that are in the community, where they became a gathering place for people in the community to talk to. It's like a marketplace, if you will. We have seen those type of stories over and over again during the pandemic in some of the communities throughout the country we work with. The fact that these businesses, and, you know, entrepreneurs are a special group of people. They have tenacity, they have grit, they have great ideas, they won't quit. These entrepreneurs are the lifeblood of many of the communities, particularly in Selby Avenue in Milton over there, where I hung out as a young man, and just bring back great memories.
And Alex, I'm curious about your reaction.
Well, first of all, I also enjoy that corner quite a bit. It's right on our way to the Coven St. Paul. To that point, I mean, really, our business is all about community, and that's really where I think, you know, Two Scoops and businesses like Two Scoops are thriving, because people want to come out and support them and help them out. You know, I think, you know, we've seen, I think it was back in September, and maybe Gary has the exact number, but, you know, Black-owned businesses closed their doors at, like, you know, I think it was like 40% of them.
That's right.
In September. It was wild. And so when we're looking at, you know, who's suffering the most in this, is it truly is our Black and Brown communities. And what, you know, I'm hopeful for is that we can, you know, get through this. I just saw yesterday that Handsome Hog, which just opened up recently, Justin Sutherland's restaurant, right across the street from us in St. Paul, just is closing temporarily until there's some relief coming. So I know that we're all kind of in this position where we're like, you know, holding on for dear life, and it truly is the community that's keeping us alive.
Yeah, and that's part of my fascination with, you know, having a conversation with both of you is the how important small business and entrepreneurship and freelancers are to the vitality, the health of a neighborhood. Let's go to the phone lines in Sammy in Minneapolis. Sammy?
Hi. It's so great to be on the show today. Thank you for having this as your topic.
Sure.
So I started a music therapy practice in March. I had decided to do this prior to the pandemic, but I think that because with the pandemic shutdowns, every sort of therapeutic service went to telehealth. And so I feel like I was able to enter the market more easily because I had from the start built my model over telehealth, whereas some of the other practices were primarily operating out of therapy offices and had to transition to telehealth. I think that helped me in a way, and I'm also pretty savvy with technology, so I was able to kind of figure it out pretty quickly. And I would also agree with the other callers that have called in that the community of people wanting to show more support during this time has been really helpful. People just wanting to spread the word, especially being a therapeutic service. I think that the people in need for that has grown immensely. So that's also been a good timing, I guess. A good people need this service, and we're still able to deliver it through telehealth. So well, that's kind of my story, and it's been good.
Well, congratulations. That's good to hear. And now I'd like to go to Duluth and Donna. Donna?
Hi there.
What's your comment?
Can you hear me? Oh
yes, again. Yeah.
Well, I'm a registered nurse. I've been working 35 years in Duluth. And I opened a cleaning business about 8 years ago called Gertie's Cleaning. And I also opened an Airbnb in the lower level of my home. And on my property, I have a trailer camper and a tent site for Airbnb. We were very successful. The cleaning business was great. So was the Airbnb until the pandemic hit. And then everything tanked. People canceled their reservations. I had to lay off all of my staff on the cleaning business, except for one. But about mid-May, the Airbnb started picking up, and it became so popular because it was out in the country in northeastern Minnesota. People felt they could, social distance while they were here. It was the best year ever. So Airbnb has done really well. In the meantime, I found a building in Two Harbors, an old building downtown Two Harbors, that I was able to buy with some of my retirement funds. And I needed to convert the upstairs to an Airbnb. I thought that would be very successful. Two Harbors is a big tourist place. So I opened another business, Gertie's Construction Management, and I made that a union company so that I could pay a living wage to my employees. So now I have a construction business that I opened during the pandemic, and and my cleaning business has picked up a little bit. I still have one person on unemployment, but I think the Airbnb business has very little been affected by the pandemic.
Well, it seems like you have this what is almost like a need or an urge to be starting a business,
right? Well, it was kind of a retirement plan, but I do enjoy people. And I think, you know, it's just been a bonus to have, you know, the guests and the clients. And the other bonus is providing people with a living wage. You know, my employees can spend their money locally and, you know, pay for things. And that's very rewarding. And I've always felt that it has been. So maybe someday I can retire from being a nurse and just do this.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for calling in. And we have more questions for Gary and Alex. If you're just joining us, I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. We're exploring the risks and rewards of starting a small business during the pandemic economy. My guests are Gary Cunningham, President and CEO of Prosperity Now, and Alex West Steinem, co-founder and CEO of The Coven. Give us a call with your questions and observations about starting a business during hard times. Did you start one during the last recession a dozen years ago? What did you learn from that experience? If you're a small business owner, what recommendations do you have for people just starting out as entrepreneurs? The number is 651-227-6000 or toll-free 800-242-2828. And a question for both Gary and Alex, and I'll start with you, Gary. But as both of you have mentioned, you know, the business failure rate of Black and minority entrepreneurs early on in this pandemic was just horrendous. I mean, the numbers were terrible, heartbreaking. So as we look ahead, as we move forward, you know, how do we create better opportunities for Black and minority entrepreneurs going forward? Gary?
Well, one of the good things is that we're starting to see some comeback from the original numbers. So there is some data out there that shows that folks are trying to recreate their businesses or go into new businesses. So the entrepreneurial spirit is alive and well. The advice I would have for someone that wants to go into business is that there is so often people don't find help as they're going in, and finding business support organizations like Neon in North Minneapolis or NDC Neighborhood Development Center in St. Paul or VITA in Minneapolis to actually work with them on their business plan. So that they know when they go into business that there's something sound there. The second thing is capital. You either need debt capital or investment capital, you can get that through your a lot of small businesses do that through their retirement, or they do it through their home home equity, or friends and family. For African American and Latinx entrepreneurs, the cause of the wealth gap between people of color and Native Americans and whites, whites have 12 times the wealth on average than they have. So trying to go that route of mean friends and family, the home ownership rate in Minnesota for African Americans is like 25%. Yeah. So that's not going to be their route. That's not the route that they normally take. They end up with taking on a lot more debt usually than other businesses, and that holds the business down. So the more that you can come in with equity capital on the front end, and these organizations that are out there actually can help you think through what you're doing. And there is opportunity in the pandemic, depending on the ideas that you bring to the table and the niche, and what entrepreneurs do the best is they fix problems in society. They actually find a niche, they get into that niche, and then they expand their businesses through that niche market that they create for themselves. And we've heard a couple of those on the phone already. And so having that, being able to get in there, get in that niche, and then solve a problem is what entrepreneurs do. And so I'm not surprised you're seeing more and more coming up with these great ideas on how to make that happen. In fact, before the pandemic, Chris, African Americans in Minnesota and throughout the country had the fastest growth as entrepreneurs in the country, significantly increasing for that previous 7-year period. However, since the pandemic, we have seen a slowdown, but I don't think that entrepreneurial spirit has been dampened.
And Alex, I mean, change, looking forward, making the situation better.
Yeah, you know, I think what's been interesting is I had a conversation yesterday with one of our members, Eliana Reyes, who's a on-camera talent. So you can imagine a lot of her bookings were canceled really early on. But she also has this business consulting piece that's been growing a lot. And, you know, to Gary's point about
you know, finding new ways to use your talents. I've found this really interesting is, you know, she mentioned that she was, you know, scared during the pandemic, but this opportunity kind of pushed her to create her own income stream. And we're seeing that even with folks in the corporate world who are now like, well, I'm, you know, there could be layoffs, you know, at a large corporation, my job might not be safe. And so how can I use my talents to stretch maybe into some freelance work? And so I think, I mean, the future is really interesting. I think we're, you know, there's opportunity. The biggest challenge, I think, for a lot of small businesses, particularly women of color, is having that connection and community to folks who can help mentor and support them along the way. And so to Gary's point, there are a lot of organizations that are out there who both provide funding and coaching opportunities. I also see, you know, programming around kind of how do you set up your LLC? How do you market your business? Where do you find your audience? These are all programs that exist out there with groups like the Activate Network that serves women of color. The Coven certainly has, you know, a lot of programming going on. Fearless Commerce is another group for Black women business owners, and Lunar Startups, which is for folks who are maybe a little bit further along in their business journey, who are ready to accelerate their business and maybe take it to the next level, moving from like one to two locations to, you know, hundreds of locations. And, you know, while that does take a bit of capital infusion that Gary mentioned, there's real opportunity to serve, you know, new problems that are existing that I don't think are going away. I think people are getting used to kind of working from home. They're getting used to, you know, maybe ordering takeout more often. They're getting used to, you know, these new ways of working and living. So perhaps there's an opportunity as we head into 2021 and beyond is to figure out what are some sustainable things that your business can offer ongoing. So maybe it is, maybe you did build out kind of a digital component of it that can now exist beyond the pandemic.
Yeah. And speaking of resources for entrepreneurs, let's go to Brian. Brian, you're in southern Minnesota, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So what do you do?
Yeah, so I'm the executive director of the Regional Center for Entrepreneurial Facilitation. It's a we provide free and confidential service, and we've been amazingly busy helping folks write business plans. We just did a business plan competition, had a lot of college students with great ideas. It's amazing the apps that they're coming up with, either sitting in their dorm rooms or sitting at home. Every one of them said, you know, being quarantined sucks, but here, we're gonna fix something here. And so that's been pretty amazing in itself. But one thing that's certainly noticeable is that we work with a lot of minorities. We don't turn anyone down, and we've got interpreters. There are a lot of minorities that are starting businesses right now because they typically don't take traditional banking routes. They'll either self-fund themselves or they self-fund their families. So they've got a completely different network already in place. Really, all we do is help come in, create business plans, do the pro formas, all of that, and they literally will fund themselves. And so, again, I think that there's always that bright, shiny spot. Rural areas have always traditionally struggled with main streets. We've also been working with communities, small towns, and if they've got possession of a vacant building, we're working with them to give the building away. It helps that entrepreneur get started. If it doesn't work, they hand the keys back, but it's a win-win.
Is that working? Are people, are Main Streets willing to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. We haven't had one fail yet. We had a little Chinese couple go into one. We had another couple that actually moved from the North Shore down here to one. So, again, these vacant businesses, or excuse me, these vacant buildings, we've been working on this for years and finally came up with this idea, and it's perfect. I mean, again, it's win-win. The communities are getting something back in a vacant building. If it doesn't work, they hand the keys back to the city. It's remodeled. It's repurposed. We just discovered that those startup costs are the things that are prohibiting folks from basically trying their idea.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling in. I think that's a great idea. And Gary, is this something you've come across or have you seen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was a project in downtown Minneapolis where they were taking storefronts and allowing people to try out ideas and do tests. Markets of their idea. I thought it was a great way for people to at least try out their ideas, do something with a vacant storefront that was there. So these are exciting things. And I'm glad he raised the question of rural, because in many rural areas across Minnesota, I actually grew up on a farm in Wisconsin in part. And so all these small farmers are actually small business owners as well. People don't think about it in quite in that way, but they are actually part of the economic mainstream that we're trying to create as well. And so supporting small towns, supporting small rural farmers is also part of what we're trying to do to lift up and ensure that they get the supports that they need in order to either keep going during this time or to generate new ideas to create new businesses within those communities. And one of the main issues that they have is getting broadband within their communities, which is something I know Governor Walz and others in Minnesota have been fighting for a long time. But without that broadband in these rural areas and Native nations across Minnesota, it's very difficult to go to the city every time you want to do business, et cetera. So I totally can relate to what he was saying. I think I was just heartened by that story in southern Minnesota.
Yeah.
Right. Great.
Well, let's go to Molly in St. Paul. Molly?
Hey.
What is your experience?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, my name is Molly O'Connor. I use she, her pronouns, and my COVID story is in March 2020. I was going to start a new job as an evaluation and data management specialist for a camp in the Twin Cities. Though due to COVID and the unknowns if the summer camp could even happen, the org implemented a hiring freeze and canceled my position. I had already put in my 2 weeks notice at my previous job, and they decided to not extend my contract because they also didn't know how COVID would impact their money flow, and that's how I ended up becoming unemployed due to COVID. And after, yeah, it really sucked. So after a brief pity party and some intentional healing, I decided to follow a dream of mine, and that was to start an evaluation and communication firm. I called it Coco Canary Consulting because it's named after my band. It was hard to figure out a name, and I thought, I'll just name it after my band. And to be honest, And speaking from a privileged place, being unemployed and starting a business is probably the best thing that could have happened to me. I was extremely unhappy at my previous job, and I'd seen my expertise being used to take advantage of the communities we served, which were predominantly communities of color, which, along other story, it's a result of the white supremacy problem in the nonprofit and philanthropic sectors. But anyways, so now with my evaluation practice, I'm able to be intentional with who I work with and the work I do. I get to help my clients define their purpose and measure their impact. I use like a racial equity lens, and I also use community-centric practices. And something that's just I'm really happy about is I get to just kind of follow what my heart and values are. So that's why with the work I do now, I try to inspires inclusion, support social justice, and again, promote anti-racism culture and all the work we do. So that's my COVID story.
That's great. And you're making enough money to pay the bills?
Honestly, yeah. I had a goal to make more than what I was making at my past job, which wasn't a lot. And I reached that. And I'm just feeling so thankful. I also wanted to shout out to Alex. I'm actually part of the coven. I joined due to their community scholarship. So I wanted to thank Alex to the public for the great community.
Well, great. Well, I'm so glad you called in. And, you know, Alex, it's now this is not for everybody, but it is interesting. You have a bad situation. You lose your job. You lose your potential job. And yet at the end, you turn it into something that you really want to be doing.
Yeah. And thanks, Molly, for calling in. It's great to hear from you. Despite being a community space, I miss people. so it's fun to hear from our folks.
Isn't that true? It is just you miss those conversations.
Yeah, well, you know, and some of that is just, I think people miss happenstance, you know, just bumping into folks. And that's really where, you know, the core of our business was like, you know, people would sit next to each other and, you know, ask to borrow a charger. And the next thing you know, they're starting a business together. I mean, that truly happens out of our space. And I think, you know, it is really challenging to see the bright side sometimes when you're sitting in a position of unemployment or uncertainty in employment. And where, you know, I've seen the light is folks really kind of helping each other connect with their, you know, deeper skill set. And to Molly's point, you know, she was able to take this skill that she has to create something of her own and maybe even, you know, own her own schedule, charge her own prices, make the money that she needs to make for herself or her family. But what I do want to point out, too, is, you know, and I mentioned this in the beginning, is the struggle for parents who may have great ideas or you know, maybe even brain space with some unemployment that you know, happened to them. But they're not able to execute on the idea because they're, you know, now teacher and, you know, full-time caregiver, which might not have been their position beforehand. So I do think while, you know, this has been an opportunity to think bigger, we do have so many parents who are really struggling to just get through the day of distance learning. I have two kids myself and lucky enough and privileged enough to have help at home. But, you know, in a two parent entrepreneurial household, if we didn't have that help, I would be in a much more challenged position to both put food on the table through freelance work, continue to foster community through the coven with my co-founders, keep, you know, my kids entertained and or taught.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot going on for women. You know, there's a lot going on for our parents right now.
Well, let's go to Michaela in Minneapolis. Is it Michaela? Did I get that right?
You did, yes. And I would love to just jump right off of Alex's point.
Well,
a quick shout out. Disclaimer, I'm also a member of the coven. And she couldn't have set that up better for what I wanted to share. I started my business several years ago because I'm a mother, or I wanted to become a mother at the time, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to maintain the career that I had and be a good mother. I just, there was too many demands on my time at my job. And so it's been interesting because one of the things that I think is really important, just to touch on the point that Gary made, was he said that this is an opportunity for us to think about how to create a community that an economy that works for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious to hear what Alex and Gary and you think about how do we really focus on providing opportunities for people who need more flexibility. I think the pandemic is giving us an opportunity to think much more broadly about how people work, how people live their lives and involve their lives in their work or involve their work in their lives. And, you know, how can we support parents better? How can we support teachers better? You know, here in Minneapolis, touching on the you know, the unrest we've had and what Molly's point, you know, how can we create an economy that truly works for people of all backgrounds and all walks of life?
Well, it's a great question. So thank you very much for that. And I'll start with you, Gary, and then go to Alex. But, okay, her question is, you know, how do we focus on providing opportunity for people who need flexibility?
Well, part of the reason I got into this work of focusing on how do we create financial systems and structures that work for everyone is because I read a study out of the University of Washington Business School. And it was a 10-year study of income data on Black and white families. And what they found was the only place that the gap in income between white and Black families closed was entrepreneurship. If you were an African-American entrepreneur, that gap closed completely. And then what I've seen in each of these communities is you see these entrepreneurs, just like Molly and the others, that are actually creating businesses that are creating social good within these communities. And part of the reason that you see more and more people turning to entrepreneurship is because it actually creates the ability for them to live out their passion, to live out their vision of what they want to do. And what I wanted to be able to create, and what I'm working on now and worked on in the past, is how do we create more avenues for young people, for people that are in their middle career, to actually think about taking off and doing, living their life and living their passion, and at the same time, contributing back to the community in some real way. And so I think, one, the story, this whole program has just been, just really heartening, and really lifted my spirits, Chris.
Oh, good. Well, Alex, I mean, you're living what she's talking about. Thoughts about how to create a more flexible system?
Yeah, I think, you know, thanks, Michaela, for that question. And I think looking to Black entrepreneurs is really where you should start. You know, we're the most resilient. We're the most, you know, marginalized. We're the most, you know, we're working with the least. And yet we continue to get back up time and time again. And so I think really listening and understanding what, you know, entrepreneurs need, what women need, what Black entrepreneurs need, you know, we're building our own economies, essentially. We're building our own communities of care and wellness. I look to folks like Tommy Beavis from Pimento, Jamaican Kitchen, who turned his business essentially now into not only is he serving amazing jerk chicken, but he's also making sure that we have like Black liberation across, you know, social, political, economics. And those things are really important. And entrepreneurs are really leading the charge in that. And they're really the ones who have the most grit and fight and tenacity to do so. So I would continue to look to them. We want to provide healthcare for our employees. We want to provide childcare support. We need funding for growth and for those opportunities. And so I've been, you know, excited to see what the state is going to roll out, you know, for emergency funding. But I'm even more excited to see what is the long-term sustainable opportunities for funding businesses, particularly businesses of color, so that when we do have a rainy day fund or a rainy 6 month fund when something does come up like a pandemic.
Yeah. So let me go to, in building that, you know, let's go to Jimmy in South Minneapolis. We're almost out of time, Jimmy, but I wanted to hear what it is you're up to.
All right. Well, my name is Jimmy Higgs, and I'm part owner of Canopy Mental Health and Consulting. And we just opened our doors in August. We opened this practice. We started talking about it about a year ago, but by the time we opened our doors, a whole lot of things are taking place. Number one, we're a primarily Black-owned practice, and we hit the ground running with the murder of George Floyd and people who were impacted by that. And talking to people who were severely impacted by COVID, because we are primarily people of color, serving people of color. So a lot of people of color came in with either fears of COVID-19 and how it impacts people, and also their pre-existing mental health conditions. And as we went forward, you know, a lot of things came up. They were worried about the presidential election, the darkness and the cold of not being around family during the holiday season, and just moving forward into, you know, the darkness of COVID-19. So we really hit the ground running, and it's fortunate and unfortunate because we've been really busy and we've been really successful, because at the end of the day, a lot of people of color want to go and be centered for their mental health by people of color. So we at Canopy Mental Health and Consulting take great pride and privilege in being there and being able to serve them. So we've been really thriving, being able to give back directly to people of color by centering in with people who look like them.
Well, thank you very much. And thanks for sharing your story with us. I really appreciate it. So we've come to the end, and I want to just thank our guests, Gary Cunningham. He's president and CEO of Prosperity Now, and it's great to talk to you again, Gary. And Alex West Steinman, is co-founder and CEO of The Coven. And this program was produced by Maya Beckstrom.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieMPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.